beyond our own experience. Here we open our loving minds to the mystery of the wonder of the earth and nature. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truths, both meaningful and sustaining. On this Earth Day, here we seek to offer an inspiring message that provides wholeness in a broken world. Here we seek to apply reason to our understanding of our world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer a special welcome to those who are first-time visitors. If you are new to the church, we invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of your gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll be happy to send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about our programs and activities. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 years old through these doors to the left and the first room past the foyer. Our religious education program begins when we bless our children on their way to the class and concludes around 11:30. While waiting, adults can enjoy coffee and conversation in the worker room. For those who have chemical sensitivities, we have a designated scent-free zone in the first three pews along the right wall. If you're allergic to chemical scents, we welcome you to take refuge in those pews. We also ask that you respect the needs of folks with allergies and not sit there if you are scented using scented detergents or soaps, perfumes, or hair products. Essential oils are usually fine, but most of the other products will cause unpleasant reactions for folks with chemical sensitivities. At the front, we have our spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages. You are invited to go to the spirit chair anytime during the service and take an activity back to your seat. Children and youth are encouraged to attend religious education programs when we sing and bless them later in the service. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. I have a few announcements. If you have an announcement read on, if you want to have an announcement read on Sunday, please fill out one of these forms, which are right on the table over there. So let's see, our first announcement is from Mary Weber. Thanks to the folks who came to our second annual trivia night, we made $392 for the church, but more importantly, we had a great time together. And then Michael Schmidt, where's Michael? There he is. Next Sunday, April 30th, will conclude our annual stewardship pledge drive. The service will be followed by a catered meal as a celebration of our abundance. We would very much like to encourage all members to attend. And now let us begin our time of worship with a special prelude by John Herndon. He will be singing "When My Morning Comes Around" by Iris DeMent.
Family and I this past summer had the opportunity to visit what we consider to be the three most beautiful churches that we've ever seen. The first one of those being Yosemite National Park. The second one was Calaveras Big Trees, and the third one was Muir Woods. And so when in Yosemite, when I was climbing Limber Dome, and after I caught my breath again at the top of Limber Dome, I thought of this song, so I wanted to do this today. When my morning comes around,
and I alone will know. Climb the great big mountain, and that's all that will matter when my morning comes around. When my morning comes around, I will look back on this valley, at these sidewalks and alleys where I lingered for so long, and this place where I now live. It'll burn to ash and cinder like some ghost I won't remember when my morning. Morning comes around. From a new cup I'll be drinking, and for once I won't be thinking that there's something wrong with me. And I'll wake up and find my faults have been forgiven, and that's when I'll start living. When my morning, when my morning comes around, when my morning comes around, when my morning comes around, I know that my morning will come around. I know that my morning will come around.
As we approach our annual stewardship season, we will hear each Sunday from members who want to share experiences of the First Unitarian Church of Alton. I now invite Dorothy Wilson to the pulpit for this morning's chalice testimonial.
Okay, good. Good morning, everyone. I wanted to share why I support this church. I've always been a spiritual seeker. I've always been a spiritual seeker, always looking for a church where I could embrace the doctrine and be part of a community. Most of my adult life was spent in the suburbs of Houston, Texas, but I knew early on that Christian churches, the conventional Christian churches, were not for me. In my 20s, I was introduced to Unity, which I attended occasionally for the next 30 plus years. Their sermons were always very engaging, and I am still pretty much in agreement with their understanding of things spiritual, but it was never felt like home. A little too formal and a little too certain. And the music was kind of awful for me. About a year after I moved back to this area, my hometown, I was searching the internet for the closest Unity church, thinking that that was the best organized church I would be able to find. When I came across this church, I read the website for this church and for UUA and fell in love with the seven principles. After a few Sundays visiting, I knew I had finally found the church home I had always hoped for. In these last 2 years, I've gained friends, gained spiritually and emotionally, and learned a lot. I think we have a treasure in this church. We really like each other, we have fun, And I think somehow this church is more than the sum of its parts. We care about making the world a better place and ourselves better people. And to do that, we are free to follow our own path without any higher authority telling us how to do that. That's what makes this church so unique and so effective for personal growth. I'm very happy to do what I can to support this church. We'll have chalice lighting. Sabrina is going to light our chalice today. And if you'll speak with me the words. Okay. As the first hint of spring begins, peek through the barren ground. As that little sprig grows into a healthy stem, as that stem grows into a stalk and forms a bud, as that bud slowly opens with each new day to form a yellow daffodil, let us be like that first hint of green, renewed by the warmth of the sun's rays, and ready to emerge with a new energy, ready to face the day. We light this chalice to bring a glimmer of that warmth into our space.
Our opening words is called, the title is Beatitudes for Earth Sunday by Richard S. Gilbert. Blessed are the heavens, for they declare the power of creation. Blessed is the earth, our beloved home, for she is a planet of plenitude. Blessed are the waters thereon, for they give rise to living things. Blessing is the land, for it is a source of life abundant. Blessed is the air we breathe, for it fires us to live and love. Blessed are the beasts of the field, for they are glorious to behold. Blessed are the birds of the air, for they carve a graceful arc in the sky. Blessed are the mountains and the seas and the valleys, for their variety makes rich our habitat. Blessed are the fields of grain, the orchards of fruit, for they give sustenance, asking nothing in return. Blessed are the dwellers on earth, for they cherish the privilege of living upon it. Blessed are they who protect the earth and all her creatures, from the plants of the fields to the trees of the forest, for their reward shall be harmony with the web of existence. Rejoice and be glad, for the earth and her people are one. And please rise now in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 175 in your gray hymnals, We Celebrate the Web of Life.
Yeah.
And now time for story for all ages, and Ben Heft will come up and read you a story.
Today, I'm going to be reading Granddad's Prayers of the Earth by Douglas Woods and illustrated by P.J. Lynch. And this book has been donated to the church by Jack and Ginger McCall. When I was little, my granddad was my best friend. Being with him always made the world seem just right. Granddad and I liked to go for walks in the woods together. We didn't walk very far, or very fast, or very straight. While we walked, I would ask him questions about things I wasn't sure of. Why is it, Granddad? I would ask. And what if? And does it ever? One day, I asked my granddad about prayers. For a long time, Granddad was quiet. He didn't say anything until we came to the tallest trees in the forest. And then he answered with a question. Do you know, boy, he whispered, that trees pray? I listened closely, but I couldn't hear them. See how they reach for the sky, he said. They reach and reach for the clouds and sun and moon and stars. And what else is reaching for heaven but a prayer? I thought about the trees and kept listening for them. And while I thought, I sat down on an old mossy rock. Rocks pray too, said Granddad, pebbles and boulders and old weathered hills. They are still and silent, and those are two important ways to pray. I thought hard about rocks. I picked up a pebble and stuck it in my pocket. We walked a little farther and came to a small stream. The water splashed and sparkled. A tiny fish hovered in the shadows. Do streams pray too, Granddad? I asked. Streams pray too, he answered, and lakes and rivers and waters of all kinds. Sometimes they pray silently like the rocks. They lie still and calm, reflecting clouds or birds or sunsets or the first evening star. Sometimes they pray with movement of the earth giving themselves to the ocean, giving themselves to the sky, and beginning their journey all over again. Sometimes water prays with laughter, chuckling, and their friends, the rocks, and sometimes they pray by dancing, leaping into the air, and falling back down again. These are all ways to pray, said Granddad. But there are more. The tall grass prays as it waves its arms beneath the sky. The flowers pray as they breathe their sweetness into the air. The wind prays as it whispers and moans and sighs. It is saying a prayer and singing a hymn at the same time. A bird prays when it sings the first song of the morning, and it prays in that silent moment just before it sings in the robin's last song at sundown. It is an evening prayer. All beings of the world pray, said my granddad, as they slip through the forest or sparkle in the water, as they climb mountainsides or soar into the clouds or burrow into the earth. Each living thing gives its life to the beauty of all life, and that gift is its prayer. When we were quiet, my granddad and I, he was watching something far away, and I was thinking all about what he said, about rocks and trees and grass and birds and flowers. Finally, I asked him to tell me about the prayers of people. Granddad smiled and ruffled my hair. Some people pray some of the most wonderful prayers of all, he said. Bending down to smell a flower can be a prayer, said my granddad, quietly watching the sunrise, feeling the slow turning of the earth, and saying hello to a new day. Is one of the oldest prayers. Standing in snowy woods on a winter day and watching your breath become part of the breath of the world is a way to pray. Making music or painting a picture can be a prayer. Holding hands around the table with family and friends, remembering that old that holds us together and giving thanks is one of the greatest prayers. Sometimes, said Granddad, some people pray when they are sad or sick or lonely or have a problem too big to carry by themselves. They must say words they have learned from their fathers or mothers or granddads or great-grandmothers. But often they must find their own words, and important things to remember is that the words will always be right if they are real and true and come from the heart. We had walked far enough, and Granddad said, "It is time to go back." But I had one last question. "Are our prayers answered, Granddad?" I asked. Granddad smiled. "Most of the prayers are not really questions," he asked. "And questions," he said, "and if we listen very closely, a prayer is often its own answer, like the trees and winds and waters. We pray, become, because we are here not to change the world, but to change ourselves. Because it is often we change ourselves that the world is changed." My granddad and I went for many walks after that one, and I often listened for the prayers of the earth, but I was never sure I heard them. Then one day my granddad was gone, and no matter how hard I prayed, he didn't come back. He couldn't come back. I prayed and prayed until I couldn't pray anymore, as so I didn't for a long time, and the world seemed dark and lonely without my granddad in it. Until one day I went for a walk and found a big rock under small trees and sat down on it. Overhead the branches swayed and a breeze whispered in the leaves. I heard a stream flowing nearby and a robin singing from the honeysuckle bush. And I heard something else too, something that sounded sounds of breezes and birds and water. I heard prayers. The earth was praying, just like my granddad said. So I joined in. "Thank you," I prayed, "for all tall trees and sweet flowers, for still rocks and singing birds, and especially for my granddad." And as I prayed, something changed, and my granddad seemed somehow near. And for the first time in a long time, the world seemed just right.
All right, now let us sing our children off to their classes. Financial contributions to this congregation come from sacrifice and hard work. We are so grateful for this and commit together to ensure the funds we gather collectively do a greater good for ourselves and our world than they could have done alone. May there be an offering to sustain and grow the life and mission of this congregation. May we give in love and hope. Thank you. Now let's share in our offering blessing on the wall. The church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves and these our offerings. We regularly take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. We do this by taking a stone or stones from the bowls as we enter at the back of the sanctuary or from here on the chancel. We allow the stones to focus our awareness on those things most important in our lives. We place those stones in the cleansing waters of this community, part of which has been collecting during our annual water communion service. If you have joys, sorrows, and celebrations or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
Our reading for the day is the Goldilocks planet. "This porridge is too hot," she exclaimed, so she tasted the porridge from the second bowl. "This porridge is too cold," she said, so she tasted the last bowl of porridge. "Ah, this porridge is just right," she said happily, and she ate it all up. Hopefully you recognize that from Goldilocks and the Three Bears. Astrobiologists, whoever they are, they also use the term Goldilocks planet. It's the zone where a planet's distance from the star means that it's neither too hot nor too cold and can conceivably support life, while the other two extremes result in a planet incapable of supporting life. Our own Earth occupies what the scientists call the zone, the Goldilocks zone. Our planet Earth has the temperature, the water, the atmosphere, the energy, and the nutrients, all the conditions necessary for life as we know it. Mars is too cold, Venus is too hot. I hope I didn't turn those around. The Earth is just right, right distance for liquid water to sparkle and life to blossom. This planet has served as home to millions of critters with wings, legs, fins, feathers, and scales, and plants with roots, leaves, and berries. Biogenesis, life comes from life. This is where I would show a 3-minute video called The Miracle of Life. Google was not happy with the way I loaded that up. I could do an interpretive dance of the video. That might not be a good way to go, but it does have the sun rising and whales swimming, if whales swim, and butterflies flying and trees growing and changing of leaves. It has some Amish people plowing in the field, kids playing, and then it takes a dark side turn. I'm going to leave that up to your own imagination of what takes place there. The take-home message of the video is that one species, humankind, is taking over. We're literally taming the wildness of nature. The Earth's temperature is increasing. The makeup of species is being altered, that so-called sixth extinction. Evidence is piling up that this is a result of our human activity. In many of the children's books, and Ben did an excellent job, I think, really capturing the book he took care of, and on our PBS videos, the pages and the screens are just full of giraffes, wolves, and chimpanzees, but the real world has very few left of these, and most of them probably are in zoos. Two iconic animals are nearing extinction. Giraffes, the world's tallest animal, has suffered a grave decline in their population. The cheetahs, not to be confused with Cheetos, is the world's fastest land animal. They're faring even worse. There's only 7,100 of these left in the wild. There are about 80,000 giraffes in the world compared to 2 billion cattle. 200,000 wolves compared to 400 million domesticated dogs. 50 million penguins compared with 50 billion chickens. 250,000 chimpanzees compared to over 7 billion humans. Evidence is piling up that humanity is overwhelming the natural forces of the Earth. And as we know, Goldilocks planets are hard to find.
All right, so please remain seated and join in singing number 1064, Blue Boat Home. Just stay seated. I know this is weird, just stay seated singing it, but following the song, we're going to have a moment of silence.
Still my driver.
after that beautiful song, we're going to have one moment or several moments of meditation. Blue Boat Home really reaches deep for whatever reason. I can never figure out why it's so powerful. Our message for the day is climate, community, and cucumbers. Be careful what you wish for. I was one of the people in February wishing for an early spring. It came the last few days in February. It got up to, I believe, 80 degrees. And the peach trees were budding, and large mosquitoes actually were beginning to bite. And it was reported people were coming out in flip-flops and shorts and floral shirts, and you know the routine. And then along came the northern front of the weather, and temperatures dropped to 15 degrees. Well, we're finally in the final week now of April, and I think we've made it official this time. Anyway, I can feel the sap is beginning to flow in my legs as well as some of my plants. And April is a very busy time. I hope you can kind of appreciate we're trying to pay our taxes. Hopefully you have that done. We're out there cutting grass, if that power mower will start. Sometimes it does the first time, sometimes not. Easter family gatherings, and we're trying to figure out what's going on with the Cardinals. Are they going to bring it together this year or not? We're busy people, but even busy people, it's hard to ignore Mother Nature in April time. The Cardinals, that's the other kind with feathers. They're out there busy building nests, mating, and catching insects out there. And the beauty and the mystery, looking up in the starry night, that can stir quite a bit of passion in our hearts. A little walk along a woods may surround us with pink and blue flowers. If you're lucky, maybe you'll find a few morel mushrooms hanging out around in those places. And it's been rumored that some gardeners now are putting the four S's together. I think that's sun, seed, soil, some sweat, and they're producing these little green miracles right in their backyard. As we know, as of yet, there's no app for anything like that. If the birds don't get your attention, Mother Nature can resort to a few cracks of thunder, bolts of lightning, or the threat of wind or tornadoes. It's not nice to fool Mother Nature out there. But there's a second story we're going to address today. It's not what Mother Nature does for us, but what we're doing to Mother Nature. Evidence, and we know what evidence is. All the marching was going on yesterday suggesting evidence is important for us. It's piling up that humanity is overwhelming the natural forces on Earth. On this 47th year of Earth Day, we must ask ourselves, are humans, that's us, putting the health of the planet and future generations at risk? Pope Francis has already touched on this in the encyclica, and I'm going to quote a few sentences from the Pope. We are not faced with two separate crises, one environmental and the other social, but rather one complex crisis, which is both social and environmental. Strategies for a solution demand an integrated approach to combating poverty, restoring dignity to the underprivileged, and at the same time, protecting nature. I'm going to do a UU speak on that. The two biggest challenges facing humankind, the two gorillas in the room, if you will, is climate change and increasing gap of income inequality. Both are inseparable. You can't deal with one without dealing with the other. Communities of faith, and I think us, you in particular, we already know that. We have a moral voice for equality for all people, and also as saving all life. So we have two crises then. That one crisis is climate change. Some of us from the old school used to call that global warming. I like to call it weather weirding. Of all the issues, deforestation, toxic waste, acid rain, ocean dead zones, those are terms my parents would have had no clue what those were about at their time. Of all the things going on, probably climate change is the most threatening and the most complex. Those fossil fuels, that's the things that gave us economic growth out there. Oil, gas, natural gas. When you burn these things, CO2 is released in the atmosphere faster than Mother Nature can recycle it. And despite the warnings going on for 20, perhaps 30 years, gases continue to rise. As a result, Mother Nature is now running a fever, or a temperature. The solar ice shields are melting, the glaciers are doing the same thing, and hotter summers, more droughts, and rain bombs. I've never heard of rain bombs before. Dave Murray was talking. That's why sometimes we have these massive, unexpected floodings of 4 or 5 inches of rain within an hour. But it's business as usual. And then we have this second crisis going on, and that's connected, though, to climate change. And that is the global economy converts nature into a multi-million dollar market, but poverty will continue to persist out there. About 25% of the world's population travels first class. That includes many of us here. That means we have more than enough food, probably meat eaters. We have energy, housing, health care, and we have our cars. And we drink beer out of aluminum cans. The bottom 25% are traveling third class. They're undernourished. If they have water, it's contaminated. They have no medical treatment. They have shorter lifespans, and they're hopeless. They are powerless. Planet-wide, there's an increasing concentration of wealth in the upper 5% of humanity. Now, both issues are called wicked problems. I only bring that up because I wanted to say wicked in the unit. It just sounds like the right thing to say. By wicked, we mean evil. These problems may not have solutions. They can only be managed. We may not know what the solutions might be. The experts, our government leaders, they don't agree on what the root causes are, nor do they agree what the solutions might be. Hence that notion of wicked, very complex. And on top of that, there are few, if any, technological solutions. What it means is we will have to change our behaviors and our values and our perceptions. We don't like the change. Why care about climate change? I know a number of folks up here have unplugged some things. We have gotten more efficient cars out there. We eat some organic food. We grow a few tomatoes. We have donated some money to some causes out there. We have volunteered. We may have even emailed our Congress people out there now and then. I've cared, but sometimes climate change, as well as the income gap, it seems just too big, too distant, and no solutions out there. And by the way, what does all this have to do with my life? As you can tell, we swing from involved to helplessness to maybe denial in terms of all these problems. We're much more troubled by threats we can imagine, that we can mentally conjure up a picture. A terrorist planting a bomb, a thief with a gun, an asteroid hurling towards Earth, this last one is gonna miss by a few million miles, they tell me, or a swarm of zombies. I'm not sure what the zombies are, but some people are concerned about that. So where's a good place to start? And I think a good place to start is probably going to our national leaders in Washington, D.C. I'm kidding. It's the concentration of political and economic power. There's something different in Washington, D.C. on Earth Day 27 compared to the first Earth Day in 1970. In 1970, global warming was on the radar for only a few scattered scientists in the process. But on the other hand, Washington was persuaded by the concentrated power of nearly 20 million people taking to the streets. Now these people, 20 million, they had no tweets. That was before tweets. They only had bumper stickers. Make love, not war, power to the people. And one bumper sticker that has survived nearly 5 decades is think globally, act locally. We're still trying to figure out how to do that. That's a complex issue. The White House in 1970, that's Richard Nixon, and Congress responded with a 100% vote to support the Environmental Protection Agency. 100 votes for clean air and clean water. Today, Congress and the White House can only construct walls or gridlock. I'm going to climb out on an optimistic branch or limb that climate progress will be made with or without Washington. Already, I see some grand things going on. Alton, Granite City, Edwardsville, they have become cool cities. And what that means is, and this church was responsible in part for Alton becoming a cool city, is that citizens working along with the city, they pledge to become energy efficient. They do a CO2 benchmarking, and they try to make their buildings more efficient and their vehicles more efficient in the process. And by the way, when you save energy for the city, you also save money, and they get interested. I was amazed in Alton alone when they converted their stoplights, the electric bill, when they changed those to LED lighting, they saved now $15,000 a year, as well as CO2. Before, I had no idea there was even a power bill for traffic signals out there. In addition, already we've seen about 150 coal-fired plants. Those are electric plants that produce coal, are either shutting down or converting to natural gas because people like Mary and David have installed solar panels, and that's helping move us along the way out there. So we're going to make progress with or without Washington in the start. I think perhaps one of the best places to start are in our own communities. That might be the sweet spot. Just like the Goldilocks Bears, I think they had chairs in there. Some chairs were too big. Well, Washington is too big. Some chairs are too small. That's you and I by our own. So the good right chair, the medium size, is our communities out there. In a community where people feel connected, protected, and respected, you can think of that as CPR, trust will develop. We work together and we build civil muscle. We create communities that are better to live, work, and play, and better for the environment. And when I say community, what comes to your mind? I'm a little intimidated by actually literally asking you what comes to your mind. Lots of things, taxes, schools, unaffordable housing, Edwardsville, Florissant. Sometimes when I think communities, I think of some places my wife and I have traveled to communities that we've really connected with. Santa Fe is one of those. Portland is another. Asheville, probably Madison, Wisconsin. Oh, I have mixed feelings there about returning back there. But these are interesting cities. When we were building roads here, they were building bicycle trails and walking trails in the process. I was intrigued by, in a number of these areas, people still shop their streets out there, and you find a mix of people of ages and ethnic mix, and they really seem to work. And I'm wondering, can we take some of the things they do at those communities and bring them back to make our communities even better places in the process? By the way, a few of those communities, like Santa Fe or Boulder, Colorado, I said, I really have to go back there and live. So I went back there, and I found out everybody else wanted to live there, too. Housing prices were expensive, and few jobs were available. So I don't think there's a cookie-cutter formula for making our community like those places. Indeed, we can't. Our communities are unique. But it seems like a good home in a safe neighborhood, convenient to jobs, good schools, and a UU church wouldn't be a bad thing to add, would head us in the right direction. And I wanted to explore maybe just a few principles that might help us move our communities to make them even better places to live. And these principles, I think, are a lot like the UU principles you mentioned out there. In fact, what I'm going to talk about doesn't seem too out of the extraordinary, because I think we UU people already are thinking in terms of our communities and what makes them good places to live. But one of the first things I put is to put people first. Not the economy, not roads, but put people at the center. Several weeks ago, I went to a seminar called Madison County Summit, and I think it was a very important one to go to. But they put economics first. They put roads first. They want our economy to grow, and they have the notion this will solve all of our problems. I'd like to have them state people first. The relationships, often they're invisible, they're the glue that holds our community together. And I think, first of all, we just have to improve our connections with people around us. This means terror of terror, meeting our neighbors, and maybe meeting some strangers who live in our communities. It turns out that being neighborly is something of an art that we've kind of lost, America. I'm going to quote an expert on that. Mr. Rogers, won't you be my neighbor? There's something profound there. So we need to sit at the table and discuss and learn from each other what we want, what our needs are, what it's going to take to make this place a more attractive place to live, better for the environment, better for the economy. I just put a little side note here. Our communities are at a demographic crossroads. The majority white will be one of many minorities. And when we sit at these tables to find out where we want to go in our community, we really need to embrace diversity. That's you all over again. We've been getting that message for 20, 30 years, perhaps. At these gathering places, in terms of race, nationality, religion, sexual orientation, economic status, all members must be welcomed at this table. A second principle for making our communities better is to make healthy choices easy. A livable community should be a healthy community. One number stands out about all the others as the best indicator at the health. If you're fortunate to have a doctor and you go there for your yearly checkup, you get blood pressure numbers, you get your sugar levels, you get your cholesterol levels. But one of the best numbers that indicates health is your zip code. Medical evidence shows that people living in certain zip codes face greater health risks and higher mortalities. The link between a clean, green community and physical mental health has been well established. An urban design that results in sedentary lifestyles, polluted air, food deserts, contributes to heart disease, diabetes, and mental stress and depression. When Pharma Surgeon General Murty was asked what was the biggest disease in America, without hesitating, he answered, "It's not cancer, it's not heart disease, it's social isolation, the greatest pathology of our lives today," according to him. These pages will come apart. And I think there's a bit of irony. We live around thousands of people out there, but at times we can feel isolated. And particularly vulnerable, I think, are older adults who have lost friends, lost family, and sometimes the ability to drive, and that really can isolate us. But I think we're all vulnerable to social isolation, and a vibrant community has to have a lot of public places. They could be libraries, they could be churches, they could be coffee shops, they could be corner parks, use your imagination, so that young people, older people, and strangers can mix and mingle. When we mix and mingle, we get to know each other. We get to know each other, we begin to trust people. And when we trust people, we can accomplish great things in our community. A third principle I put in here to make our communities more livable, more healthy, is mobility and transportation. One of the biggest challenges to a livable community is 50 years of automobile-dominating planning. We have built our communities around the automobile. Cars aren't going away. But just between you and I can't imagine letting my car go. But I'm working on it. But cars are expensive pets. They cost an average of $12,000 a year to maintain. They degrade air quality. For every mile I drive, I'm throwing out a pound and a half of CO2. I wouldn't think about throwing any wrappers out the window, but we do throw CO2 out there in the process. Also, for people on foot or on bicycles, cars cause problems out there. I'm amazed at the pedestrian incidents of accidents going up, particularly for the very young and the very old out there. And by the way, Alton, like Edwardsville and a lot of other places downtown, we pave over about 40% of our green space with asphalt and concrete. just so we can take care of that automobiles out there. That same Surgeon General Murty challenged all communities to become more walkable. Opportunities to walk to stores, cafes, schools, and maybe even church. AARP, have you heard of those folks? Okay, they're really getting into walkability and living in place, and they now do walkable audits. They just had a mini one here in Alton, and they use an 880 formula. And by 880, if I'm 8 years old or if I'm 80 years old, can I walk to the park? Can I take my bicycle to the corner store and get a brownie mix? And they figure if you can do that, if you're 8 or 80, everybody in between are going to be doing okay. What happened to that corner store, by the way, to go get the brownie mix? It doesn't exist. We need the freedom to choose how we're going to get around. Choices that encourage physical activity, less air pollution, and a few green spaces, not paved with asphalt. It's good for our health, it's good for the planet, and it's probably good for our pocketbook. By the way, Madison County, I think, is making some good inroads on that. Are you amazed by the bicycle hiking trails we have around? That's something, once again, I'm a UU, I don't believe in miracles, but these trails are pretty close to that in the process, and they're getting better. We have a bus system that's trying to do better and trying to get people to where they work or at off hours they're working around. And Alton, at least in this area, we're getting the new Amtrak station. That's public transportation. It's Amtrak, and they use the word multimodal. I'm getting used to it. It means buses go there, our cars go there, we can bicycle there. I'm optimistic on this area, but cars will not go away. A fourth principle would be local foods. We need to connect farmers and consumers together. Illinois has 26 million acres under cultivation, corn and soybeans mostly, amber waves of grain. In Illinois, we import 90% of our food from out of state. What that means, if we had a catastrophe, I'm going to let you use your own imagination what that might be, and we couldn't import food, in 3 or 4 days, we in Illinois would run out of food. We need to grow local foods. There is a local movement sprouting up in the Metro East, backyard gardens. I know a number of people now who have their gardens in the back, growing some tomatoes, growing some cucumbers. When you do that, you get some exercise, you get some sunshine, you get to know your neighbors, and this is contagious. Other neighbors start getting interested in a little bit gardening, and you might even share some of those cucumbers or zucchini with your neighbors. I'm still getting used to this of community gardening, where sometimes people are taking a vacant lot, it's been abandoned out there, community people get together and they turn it into a garden. And once again, it's not just the vegetables, they're getting together and getting to know each other in that neighborhood. And I think nothing's better than on a Saturday morning in June, biking down to the farmer's market and getting some vegetables or fruit, talking to a few farmers, and just as important, talking to a few neighbors out there. Once again, you're building up social capital, and that's important. So local food is good for the health of our citizens, our nature, and a local economy. We're doing better, but I think we have a long way to go. And finally, while there can be many principles, the final principle is connecting people and nature together. Richard Love is an author, talks about something called nature deficit disorder. He says children, but I think we adults also suffer it. It means we're not getting outdoor and connecting with nature. We're not getting outdoor experiences. Kids don't go in the backyard and try to dig a hole to China, if you ever remember trying to do that. It was the process, not the goal in the process. You're out there catching butterflies, and now that's probably a taboo thing today, but I think we can still catch fireflies on a warm evening. Children probably don't do that, and we don't play in creeks any longer, getting crawdads. Those are good events, but we're picking up values about nature in that process. And I think there's good reasons for that. Our streets are dangerous, that traffic is fast out there. Some of us don't have green spaces available out there. There's a perception of more danger in our community out there. And high tech, the average person, particularly a child, will spend 6 hours a day in front of a screen, TV, computer, or cell phone. Technology is not gonna go away, but somehow along with that, we gotta get 1 foot in technology, the other foot in nature out there in the process. Now, we're making some good progress. I think, you know, certainly some parents, certainly grandparents. I'm thinking of that story once again that Ben read, the importance of grandparents connecting with their grandkids out there. And community organizations such as Nature Institute and Watershed are getting people out again to play. Green parks, green space, backyards are great places for kids and adults to play, burn off energy, get their bodies moving. Nature is a very good teacher. I hope you get an opportunity today to have a little bit of green time out there. We also need to bring more nature into our community. A native forest or a simple bench under a tree, a butterfly garden on the school playground are all important places, not only for people, but also plants and animals. And sometimes our responsibility is not creating these things. We already have green spaces, and some of us just need to be stewards to make sure these places don't get paved over with concrete. I'm thinking some places where we have a 20 acres of prairie, Nan, I'm thinking about that. If you don't have a steward out there watching on our watch, things can happen in that. Same way with little neighborhood green parks. People must be there to say, you can't pave these or build on these. Reconnecting to nature is an important pathway for restoring healthy communities. It's good for people, good for nature, and good for the local community. If we do these in thousands of communities, I'm hoping that will begin making some change in big ways out there. What attracts people to a place and keeps them are invisible bonds between people and the building landscape and the city's openness to all people. And I hope you kind of begin to think about your community and your place. What is it that drew you to that community, and what's keeping you to that community, and what responsibilities you might have to that community? Every historic building restored, each people-friendly street we create, every tree you and I plant, every public meeting we attend to address racism or sexism, name your own ism on there, contributes to the legacy we leave to those who will live in our communities now, but also after us. Do we not have a moral obligation to hand down a strong, healthy, beautiful place where neighbors can grow? I think we do. And I also left a few pages somewhere else. It's the small things that count that help create a community. I did put a little piece in your service in terms of how to build community. It is biking, walking, at least sometimes. It's growing some of your own tomatoes sometimes. It's creating dialogues with people you know, our strangers. These small things help bring us together in the process. So get out there and connect with your community. Ready for a benediction?
We can, yeah. We have a hymn if we want to.
Oh yeah,
that.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. So please rise as your body and spirit is able, and sing our final hymn, number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth.
See you.
As surely as we belong to the earth, we belong together in our communities. Help us to be hopeful and resilient as we pledge to walk gently on the earth. Please remain as we'll hear the postlude of John, I believe, play.
Speaking of signs, yesterday at the March for Science in St. Louis, one of the best signs I saw was, it said, "It's so bad, introverts are here." This last song is This Land Is Your Land, which I'm sure most of us know, so feel free to join in singing. I'm going to do two verses of this, so we'll see how it goes.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Highland, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw
services ended.